Stay tuned for Bob Enyart Live, but first, here's our Denver Bible Church update. Hi, I'm Pastor Bob Enyart of Denver Bible Church. We like to study this book, the Bible, and I've just opened it to Deuteronomy chapter 21, and there's a story in here that I'd like to read to you and see if you can figure out if it applies to our nation today, for example, regarding the matter of abortion. This is in the Mosaic Law. Moses wrote the book of Deuteronomy, and it says here, Deuteronomy 21, beginning in verse 1, if anyone is found slain, that is, killed, murdered, lying in the field in the land which the Lord your God is giving you to possess, that's the promised land, Israel, and it is not known who killed him. So this is interesting. God says, if a dead body is found and no one knows who killed him, who the murderer is, then your elders and your judges shall go out and measure the distance from the slain man to the surrounding cities. And it shall be that the elders of the city nearest to the slain man, the city that's closest to the corpse, the dead body of the murdered person, shall, and as we read through the story here, he shall offer a sacrifice. Wow. The elders of that city shall bring the sacrifice and kill it. Then the priests, the sons of Levi, shall come near, for the Lord your God has chosen them to minister to him and to bless in the name of the Lord. By their word, every controversy and every assault shall be settled. And all the elders of that city, so the city that was closest to the dead body, nearest to the slain man, shall wash their hands over the sacrifice. Then they shall answer and say, our hands have not shed this blood, nor have our eyes seen it. Provide atonement, O Lord, for your people Israel, whom you have redeemed, and do not lay innocent blood to the charge of your people Israel. An atonement then shall be provided on their behalf for the blood. So you shall put away the guilt of innocent blood from among you when you do what is right in the sight of the Lord. What a story. What a command. God says, if you find a dead body in the wilderness and you don't know who's the murderer, you could see that the person was murdered, but you don't know who did it, then measure the distance to the nearest city. And that city will be held liable, corporately guilty, for the shedding of innocent blood. And only if they ask God to forgive them, and back in the Old Testament, they had to offer a sacrifice. In the New Testament, we're forgiven because Jesus Christ shed his blood, which was the fulfillment of all those symbolic sacrifices of the Old Testament. And so what the story shows us is that God holds a community guilty. When a nation becomes wicked and does wickedly, God holds the nation accountable. And a state is responsible. A country, a city, a county is responsible to have a society in which innocent people are safe. And if there is a murder epidemic, if there are crimes happening commonly, then it is the fault of the government and the society at large. And that city would only be forgiven if they didn't know who committed the murder. If they did know, for example, if they know that it's Edward Patrick O'Loughlin, the abortionist from Planned Parenthood in Denver at 20th and Vine, and the city of Denver knows, the city council knows, the county judges know, the mayor knows, everyone knows, then the city is guilty because guilt is also corporate. Now stay tuned for Bob Enyart Live.
Service with the weak and I'm not. You need a man on a mission from God.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular, self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. In just a moment, I am going to speak with a recently retired GI, a man, Pat Bosca, who's apparently fought in Gulf War I for us and for the freedom of innocent victims of Saddam Hussein. And he's written some articles on the internet that I'd like to chat with him about. And so about government generally. And he seems like a neat guy. So we'll look at those. And meanwhile, I've got an email here. You know you're a leftist if radical profiling, instead of racial profiling, you know you're a leftist. This is great. You know you're a leftist if you believe John Ashcroft poses a greater danger to America than Osama bin Laden. You know you're a leftist if you think President Bush lied to the nation, but his predecessor did not. You know you're a leftist if you believe President Bush is too dumb to be president, but the Dixie Chicks and Martin Sheen are foreign policy experts. You know you're a leftist if you're enraged by the mistreatment of Muslim prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, but believe the world should have stood idly by while Saddam Hussein filled mass graves with Muslims, by the way. Oh, yeah, and the Muslims at Guantanamo Bay have all gained weight, probably because we put them on our now famous low-fat diets. All right. Okay. So anyway, thank you for that. Was a listener in Indiana who sent that list to us. There's more to it. Maybe we'll get to those tomorrow night. Now, I would like to talk to a man who's a recently retired GI, just this year, retired from serving our country in the military. And apparently, Pat Bosca was in Gulf War I, because that's where I found out about him, on a website called Gulf1.com with the numeral one, Gulf1.com. Pat, thank you for joining us at Bob Enyart Live.
Wow, thank you.
Pat, you have a couple articles up on that site, and they're about government, which is one of our favorite topics here. Bob Enyart Live airs on the radio in Denver, but we have about 2,000 unique visitors a week to our website at kgov.com on the internet. And we call it GOV, KGOV, because we're fascinated by the topic of government. So I thought it might be fun. When we set this up, you knew that we had your article on the political spectrum and the role of government. But I've since been pointed to and read your articles on electing representatives and on republic versus democracy. And I was hoping maybe we could talk through some of these.
Sure.
That's all right with you?
That's perfect.
Pat, thank you. And by the way, which branch of the military did you serve in?
It was the Air Force.
The Air Force. And you live right outside of an Air Force base in Florida now, is that right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, thank you. I want to publicly say thank you for serving as you did. I never did serve. I was a bit... I was too young for Vietnam and too old for the Gulf War, and never found myself in the military, but have always been very thankful to those who sacrificed and served. So a heartfelt thank you, Pat.
Well, thank you. It was my honor.
Well, that's great to hear. Okay. I wanted you to know, since you had not heard of this program, we've been on the air for 12 years now, and 5 nights a week for an hour. And I come from the perspective of a conservative Christian, conservative not being the greatest term, because in our 2 minutes that you and I spoke, you said there's not much to conserve anymore. The government's pretty much a mess.
Yes, sir.
And I have to agree with you there. I think it's more accurate to call myself a right winger. And I opened the show before you got on the line introducing myself as a right-wing Christian. And so I want you to know where I'm coming from. And then your three articles here, I'd like to read the first line of each one, and then we'll begin with the one on the role of government.
Okay.
But the first line on electing representatives says, and by the way, these are, for those in the audience who might want to read these, they're short, concise, to the point, and they're certainly worth starting people to think and to talk. All right. The Americanist is the heading here by Pat Boska on electing representatives. And then it begins, a representative to our Congress or any elected position should be well-versed in the Constitution and the Bible. Now, that's a very strong start for an article on electing representatives. And then on Republic versus Democracy, many people are under the false impression that our form of government is a democracy or representative democracy. This is a falsehood. Okay, and then on the role of government, the one I thought it might be neat to begin with, because this is the broadest in scope, all civilized societies have agreed that government is necessary for people to live together peacefully. What has not been agreed upon is what role government should have. And that is just a great introduction once again. Pat, what I think is that you and I will probably disagree on some particulars, but I'm thrilled that you are pointing people in the direction of let's think through this issue of government. Let's just not accept whatever's thrown at us. So what has not been agreed upon is what is the role that government should have. Now, I've got an answer to that that we've probably said 1,000 times on this program in 12 years, but let's start with what you have. Do you have these articles before you?
Just the first one on the role of government.
Okay. Do you think you could go ahead and read that next paragraph?
Sure. Right. On the extreme left end of the political spectrum is totalitarianism. Totalitarian governments control every aspect of life, economics, education, culture, etc. Some glaring examples of these are the former Soviet Union, Nazi Germany, and Pol Pot's Cambodia. The history books are full of the horrors created by this system and the eventual collapse from within. Obviously, this is not the correct role for government.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead? It's interesting. So far, if I could, if I understand what you're saying, there's a political spectrum. In other words, there are different political views in the world, different forms of government. And if we were to line them up and try to understand them from an overview, at one end is the extreme left, and it's totalitarian, and the government runs everything.
Yes, sir.
At the and that's obviously not the correct role for government, you point out, and you give examples of governments that had an extreme degree of control over their people. Then you begin at the other end of the spectrum. Could you do that one?
Sure. At the other end of the spectrum is anarchy or no government at all. This always turns into a totalitarian form of one type or another due for calls for something to be done. In other words, people get tired of having to protect everything they have all the time and want some help.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, the anarchistic state is artificially created, and those who created it are only too willing to stand up and do something about it. They demand unaccountable power in return, which brings us back around to the previously discussed unacceptable role.
Okay. All right. And so at the other end, if you have on one end a totalitarian government, which controls virtually everything, at the other end of the spectrum, you have anarchy or no government. And that's obviously all that's a broken concept that doesn't function.
No, sir.
No, that does not function. And I don't think, if I think through all the major governmental entities in world history, the empires, nations, countries, city-states, for the most part, anarchy was not a form that was actually put into practice by any kind of power, because then it wouldn't have been a power. It wouldn't have existed. Anarchy is more like a void that gets filled real quickly.
Yes, sir, it sure is.
Just like nature abhors a vacuum, so do politics. And if no one is in charge, someone quickly takes control.
Exactly.
It's, even if it's even if there's a breakdown of law and order in our society. And so in the inner cities, there's hardly any good law enforced. Then you have young boys ages 13 to 19 who form gangs and they start controlling the streets.
That's true also.
Yeah. So those are the things that happen. But while I can relate to some of your observations, there's some of this that I would like to fundamentally put in a different perspective. But why don't you first do the next paragraph, if you could read that for us also.
Sure. If the left, right, or wait a minute, I'm on the wrong one here. Here we go. Somewhere near the center of the spectrum is democracy or rule by majority. It sounds good on the surface until you begin to look at the ramifications. What if the majority decides to trample on a minority's rights?
Mm.
What protections do individuals have? Since there is no restriction on what may be done by government in a democracy, it will deteriorate into anarchy and the resultant totalitarianism, as we learned from the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm. All right. And I completely agree with you, and I'm thrilled that you're warning people, as a growing number of conservative Christians, right-wing Christians are warning people that democracy is not a good idea.
No, sir. The founders abhorred democracy.
Yeah,
they looked at it.
To some extent, I would agree with that. Some of them at times would point out its extraordinary weaknesses, and it's a rather terrible form of government. And I'm glad you're joining in the effort. But I would, at this point, and then you go on to say, if left, right, and center are not proper roles for government, where do we look? Try the Constitution. Well, so that was your introduction, and then you get into your position, which, if I understand, you're a constitutionalist.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and that we should go back to the Constitution, and then we would have good government.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Could we, Pat, first talk a bit about this political spectrum? Because the spectrum that you use to draw your illustrations is the most common one that conservatives use,
mm-hmm.
or Christian right-wingers. That's what we use, the size of government. And I would like to suggest to you a different model.
Okay.
Because I think ultimately there is an ultimate truth and an ultimate authority that would be the best authority structure that we can use. And ultimate truth, you mentioned the Bible, which I was thrilled to see in one of your opening statements, and the ultimate truth resides in God. Right. You agree with that. I agree with that. And I think we both agree that we can't have a theocracy because God is not here on earth telling us who's guilty, who's innocent, and what the law should be exactly. He's not telling us how fast you could drive on the freeways.
No.
So we can't have a theocracy. So then we realize that we need to have some form of government, and we want that government to be to be a government that God would approve of, if at all possible.
Exactly.
Right? And I tend to think, since God established the family and he established church and he established governmental authority, he probably has opinions on family, on how a family should run, how a church should run, and how a government should run.
Oh, exactly.
Oh, well, praise the Lord. So we agree. And, you know, you and I did not talk other than for 2 minutes to set up this time, and I've only read your brief articles here, so I'm not sure to what extent we'll agree or disagree. In some areas,
so far we're on a roll.
Yeah, so far. But now I want to suggest to you that general conservatism is not heavily based on the Bible. It's more based on politics and pragmatism.
Yeah, my political party in power. That's all you're hearing.
Yeah, my political party in power. That's excellent.
Partisanship.
Yeah, and so that you pointed out that because things are so broken, I'm not all that excited about conserving them anymore.
No, I'm not.
Right, and neither am I. So that while generally conservatives, who I'm not too thrilled with anymore, lay out the political spectrum like this, I think that's an incorrect way to view governments, and it doesn't help us all that much. You pointed out that here, left, right, and center don't work.
No.
But I think the real spectrum is not the size of government, as though if you had a country of a million people, exactly 82,000 people in government would be right or something like that. That's I think that's somewhat arbitrary because in conservative right wingers, we generally like small government.
Right.
And I think we're correct in generally liking small government. But when if a nation goes to war, like in World War II, the government function of the nation grows during that time.
Exactly.
And that wouldn't mean that the government is therefore becoming more left wing because we're fighting the Nazis. That doesn't make sense. And so I'd like to suggest to you a different spectrum. And the spectrum is based on what government really is. Government really isn't size. That's not what government is. What government is authority.
Exactly.
And so the political spectrum that I think is accurate and biblical and more insightful is one based on authority flow. And on the true right, because God is righteous, and the book of Ecclesiastes says that the good man's heart is on his right and the fool's heart is on his left. And, you know, the Nazis were left-wingers. They were socialist.
Exactly.
And the Soviet Union were socialist, and socialism and communism are left-wing. So what I think the spectrum is authority, in that on the right you have God and his authority, and all authority flows from God, downhill from God. And on the left you have evil and rebellion against that authority. So on the left, the authority is flowing uphill against God. And you might have anarchy where the authority is sideways, it's going no which way, but or you might have raw democracy where the people are going to usurp the position of God. They're going to decide what's right, what's wrong, what kind of control they could have over their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the authority. That's the political spectrum that I think is more biblical rather than the typical conservative spectrum.
Okay.
And if we, I realize I'm just sort of throwing that on you cold.
Well, it seems that we're in basic agreement on the basic principles.
Yeah.
The size of government is actually, I think most people when they say the size of government, they're actually meaning what you're saying is the authority of authority over individual action.
Right. Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of conservatives, at least as I've presented this for over 10 years in public, most conservatives pretty readily agree with that. And they, you know, the liberals say the political spectrum is a circle and right and left are they touch in the middle. Extremes meet. And they say extremes always meet. And extremes never meet.
No.
No. The extremes never meet, and God is not so extremely good that he becomes evil. No, that's not true.
No.
God is good, and those in rebellion against God are evil, and you don't get good the more evil you become.
No.
No. So I think the liberal spectrum, which is a circle, and they have the Nazis on the right wing, and the Soviet Union and the communists on the left wing, and they have them next to each other, that's a huge deception where they're trying to say the Nazis were right wingers when the Nazis were National Socialists.
Exactly.
They
that's
were
left
wingers.
Stand for.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So now, how much time do we have before our break? And we have 3 minutes before our break. Let's continue a little further. And then, Pat, after the break, I'd like us to jump to your on Republic versus Democracy.
Okay.
All right. The next paragraph, could you read that whole thing? We just did the intro.
All right. Where are we at here?
If left, right, and center.
Okay, yeah. If left, right, and center are not proper roles for government, where do we look? Try the Constitution. Sitting into the spectrum somewhere between democracy and anarchy is a limited government whose powers are spelled out in writing and whose only role is protecting individual rights without regard to social or economic standing.
Okay. Let me read the next paragraph. The greatest difficulty with this form of government is maintaining it. Due to the unfortunate fact that some men will always desire power over others, there are constant attempts to expand the power and authority of government. Another factor is the people's willingness and ability to govern themselves, or to put it another way, I govern me, you govern you, and we leave each other alone.
Yeah, that's self-government in a nutshell right there.
Okay, well, and generally, right, you said that people have this desire to lord it over others.
Exactly.
And that, I would say, while liberals say that people, human beings, are basically good, the right-wing view of humanity is that we have fallen from our innocent state before God, and we're in rebellion, and that people are sinners.
Mm-hmm. That much, not all, but you know, all people are, yes, but some to a large, much greater extent than others.
Well, yeah, there are degrees of
those
wicked.
Those are the ones you need to protect yourself against.
Yeah, there are degrees of wickedness in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus said some will be punished with many stripes, others with few. And there are all kinds of different punishments that are authorized by God in the Bible for different crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, exactly. And if someone is envious of your new car, it's your neighbor, and they envy you and your new car, there's nothing the government should do about that, even though the envy is a sin.
Correct.
But if he tries to steal your new car,
mm-hmm.
then the theft is a sin, but it's also a crime.
Exactly.
And so the government gets involved where you are at the threshold between sins and crimes.
Right. Well, I look at it as sinning against God and sinning against your fellow man.
All right. That's, I think, excellent.
Yeah, if you sin against your fellow man, then the government can step in. But if you sin against God, that's between you and God.
Okay, I think your division there is brilliant. I've not heard it put that way. I don't recall. And maybe we could refine it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because you sin against God, right, that's between the man and God.
Right.
And the church could get involved and warn him and preach to him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's between him and God. Then if you sin against your fellow man, even there it has to cross a threshold to where it becomes a crime. Because we wrong one another constantly where it's not an actual crime. And in the Bible, I think God spells out the fundamentals of a criminal justice system. For example, in the Ten Commandments, you have do not murder, do not steal, do not commit adultery, and do not commit perjury. That is,
exactly.
Don't bear false witness against your neighbor.
Right, don't lie.
Yeah, well, actually, don't commit perjury.
Right.
Lying, when you lie to benefit yourself and hurt someone else, or you lie to deceive people for, you know, sinful reasons, that's a sin. But I think the Ten Commandments is specifically speaking of perjury, do not bear false witness against your neighbor.
Right.
The text goes on to say don't kidnap, and here's the punishments for murder and adultery. So we have the basis of a criminal justice system in the Bible, and while my boys, as they're growing up, they're young. We have 7 boys between Cheryl and I, and they sin against one another on a somewhat regular basis.
Yeah, but I think all brothers do.
Yeah, right. Brothers are made for adversity, and a friend loves forever, says the Bible. And brothers teach one another how to live in a hostile world, but they sin against one another. I sin against my wife on occasion, and it's dreadful, and I should never. But the government doesn't step in unless the sin crosses a threshold. And that threshold, it's so important that we define it accurately so we know what should be against the law and what should be legal.
Mm-hmm.
You and I agree with all that?
Oh, yeah.
All right, great. After this break, what I would like to do is to begin to talk about your solution, which is the Constitution. And our break, just to let you know, Pat, and it's Pat Baska. Am I pronouncing your name right?
Baska, yes, sir.
Baska, B-A-S-C-A.
K-A.
I'm sorry, I got it right in front of me, B-A-S-K-A. Pat, our break is just 2.5 minutes long, so we'll be right back, okay?
All righty, sir.
Thank you so much. Bob Inyard here with a live commercial break. This first minute is for those tuning in just via the web at kgov.com, and then we'll go to our friends listening in Denver via KLTT 670 AM. But for those on the web, as you guys know, our store is fully operational at kgov.com, and you could subscribe there to some of our materials. One of my favorites is the monthly video for $24.95 a month. We'll mail you a video every month, Unlocking the Mysteries of Life. What an extraordinary video of top-notch scientists just refuting, tearing to shreds evolution. And this program, believe it or not, it was startling, but it aired on PBS stations, public TV around the country. Now, how could that happen? That was a shocker, that public television in America would air a program that forcefully shows that evolution is not true. At any rate, that's one of the videos you will get from us. Another video, now that was a third-party production, professionally produced. Another video, one of our in-house videos, is called Bob Debates an Evolutionist with nationally known Dr. Eugenie Scott, physical anthropologist, full-time. She works full-time to oppose creationism and promote evolution. So I'm just the pastor of Denver Bible Church, the host of Bob and Your Live, and I got to debate a scientist. And who won the debate? Well, who's promoting it? Eugenie's not, but we are here. So that's another. In fact, you could subscribe to our monthly videos or just go online or call us at 1-800-8-NYARTS and order one of these individually. We also have Mount St. Helens. That's from the Institute of Creation Research. What a great video. Just fascinating. And then Confronting an Atheist. That's an in-house video where I debated an atheist for about an hour. I think you'll enjoy that. And then Does God Exist? Another of our own videos. And then Bob Debates an ACLU Leader. Fun stuff. So give us a call. Bob Enyard here, and we are back. Now, normally we don't do interviews all that frequently, and when we do, it's Ann Coulter or, you know, maybe once every month or so we do an interview. But I was especially drawn toward Pat's articles, not because I agreed with everything you wrote. Obviously, we have some disagreements, but because here's a guy who was defending our country. And he's retired, and he's not just sitting back. He's putting pen to paper and saying, we need to think through what this notion of government is all about. And if we don't get it right, we're going to continue to suffer. And so on the line from Florida is Pat Bosca. You could read his articles at Gulf One. That's the numeral one, gulfone.com. Pat, when they go to that website, how do they find your articles?
You click on the button for columnist and just scroll through all the columnists. He's got several.
Go to Pat Basca.
Basca.
Basca, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Basca, all right.
There we go.
Pat Basca. Okay. All right, so Pat, your solution here that you offer is the Constitution.
Yes, sir.
And I want to offer a different suggestion to you, and you know, I don't expect you're going to say, oh, wow, Bob, you're infallible. You're the modern Protestant Pope, and you must be right. But I'd like you to consider this view, that the Constitution was written by men, many of whom were strong Christians, but not all, and certainly not all were Christians. Some were. Some of our founding fathers were downright hostile to Jesus Christ. But the Constitution was written by men who got together and fought and argued and compromised for many hot weeks in a humid Philadelphia summer. And they came up with the best that they could put together. It wasn't what any of them individually would have done, but it's what they were able to put together. And they gave us the Constitution. And in your writing on the role of government, you seem to be saying, let's look at the big picture. Let's look at the political spectrum. Let's look at this whole issue and let's find the foundation so we can do it right. And I think if the foundation only goes back to 1789, that foundation is, it's not firm enough.
Well, the founders knew their history extremely well. They went back, all the way back through the Roman Empire, and they studied and they looked and they learned from that. And that's why I believe it's the best, because they took into account human nature. And human nature is, like we said before, some people are always going to want power over others. So what we need is something written that restrains government on government's impact on the individual.
I agree. Right. That's one of the fundamental principles, that the government should have some authority by which it itself is bound.
Exactly.
Or that it should be bound, because through the history of the world, many governments, the one in charge, like Saddam Hussein, Adolf Hitler, and go back into the Roman Empire, when it was no longer a republic, but the Caesar was absolute ruler, the Pharaoh, the Ahasuerus or Artaxerxes of old, the Nebuchadnezzars, absolute rulers. They killed, they took wives, they did anything they wanted. Their word was law.
Exactly.
And that is a great wickedness. That's terribly evil, that concept.
It is.
And so this idea that the government itself should be restrained by the law is a foundational principle. Can I ask, I don't want to put you on the spot, but where in history do we see that idea first appear? What, are you familiar with any examples in history?
The first one that I can think of right offhand, it would be the 12 tables of Roman law.
Okay, when Rome was a republic and founded by a republic.
Exactly.
Well,
yeah.
And what many conservative writers point out, they do go to Rome and Rome's republic, but many then will go further back than that. And when the Roman Republic was established, a contingent of scholars was sent to Greece.
Yes.
And Solon of Athens was a lawgiver who predated the Roman Republic. And they actually took from his laws and took this principle that the government had to be restrained by the law. The government did not have the authority to violate the law. And so many conservatives that I have spoken to in 30 years when the topics come up, they've said that that's where the notion first appeared, with Solon of Athens. Well, we have, you know, our website is called KGOV, KGOVgovernment.com. And so we've talked about this topic for many years. And what we point out is all authority comes from God, and that God's word contains way more wisdom than any works of any pagan Romans or pagan Greeks, or even fighting and compromising founding fathers. And the first time in the history of the world you see that idea in print is in the Word of God, in the Bible. Because in the Bible, through Moses, God said that when you get into the land and you have a king, the king must obey the law. And you might recall, just by me mentioning that much, that God lays out the rules by which the king must govern, and the king cannot use his authority to multiply wives and to enrich himself beyond reason, and that the king must obey the law. In fact, so much so, God said, that when you come into the land and you have a king, in fact, in Deuteronomy chapter 17, I have in front of me a Bible published by Thomas Nelson, and they insert a heading in here at verse 14, and it says, the principles governing kings.
Okay.
And the principles state that the king must obey the law. When he sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself a copy of this law in a book. And it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God and be careful to observe all the words of this law. And that his heart may not be lifted up above his brethren, and that he may not turn aside from the commandment. that he may prolong his days in his kingdom. Okay.
Okay.
And so there, what I think has happened, Pat, is that among conservatives and conservative Christians, for some reason, we have yielded, we've conceded, we've given up on the authority of the Word of God, and we've placed our hope in the Constitution or English common law or the Roman Republic or Solon of Athens, so much so that when we read books and articles written by conservative leaders about government, we never go back to, even though they extol the virtues of a republic, they never go back to that comes from God and his authority, and that no government has the right to vote on or change God's law. Do not murder, don't steal, don't commit adultery. And that God is the one who laid out the boundaries of government, and that the government has no right to disobey the law.
You're right. You're exactly right.
Wow. Well, I appreciate that response. I'm thrilled.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. And Pat, again, generally, we generally what happens is, just like with the political spectrum, we found that conservatives or Christians, when they hear some of these arguments, they say, well, that's, you know, these are good points. They're biblically based, rational points. And so, but when I take that so far, that the true political spectrum is authority flow, and on the right is righteousness and God is right, and on the left is evil and rebellion and authority flowing uphill, what I find is that on the left, they'll accept any authority system other than one that flows from God. And they want to vote and have their own laws. They want to establish their own form of government. And they want to lord it over their neighbors. So when the Constitution was written, I find that our founding fathers, they heavily emphasized the influence they got from Europe, Roman law, European law, common law. And they didn't want what was going on in England of a monarchy, but they were heavily influenced by ideas of representative authority and even democracy. You know, I know that you say that our founders were not pro-democracy, but there was quite a bit of pro-democratic rhetoric in their writings, even in the Federalist Papers.
Yeah, it's democratic processes, but not the
Democracy with a capital D.
Right.
All right,
and
so
use democratic processes to elect the representatives and for voting and things like that in the legislature.
So after, for example, when they gave us the federal government, which is what the U.S. Constitution defines the federal government and tells us that the states will have a republican form of government.
Exactly.
And as far as it defining the federal government, it broke it into three branches, as we know, mm-hmm. and 1/6 of the federal government the founders made democratic, and 5/6 they explicitly made non-democratic. And see if you could agree with this. They broke it into three, the executive, the judiciary, and the legislative branches. And so each had a third of the power. They tried to balance it. And the legislative, they broke in half, the Senate and the House of Representatives. And the House of Representatives, from the beginning, was designed to be representatives of the people, and the people voted on their elected representatives.
Exactly.
The other half of the House was the Senate, and the senators were not to be elected, but they were to be selected by the state legislatures.
Yes.
And then the executive, the president, was not to be elected by the people, but chosen by the Electoral College, which was made up by people designated or delegated to go, the delegates, by, again, the state legislatures.
Correct.
And
preserve the state's power over the federal government, because, after all, the federal government is a creation of the states.
And if that was the founders' intention, obviously it didn't work.
It did, but it got changed.
Well, for how long? Well, by saying it didn't work, I mean it's not working. And we've only been a nation for a very short period of time in the scope of empires. So it didn't work well if that was their primary goal. But let's look at the third then. The third, say the Supreme Court, that was not democratic because the president is the one who nominates a candidate for the Supreme Court, and he was not elected. And it's not the House of Representatives, but the Senate that confirms the nominee. So it was two unconfirmed authorities in the government. I mean, two unelected authorities in the government that had the power over the judiciary branch. So 5/6 of the federal government was not democratic and 1/6 was. But almost immediately we had states that began to vote for the presidency. I think Virginia had a popular vote immediately with the very first election. And then soon enough, the Constitution was amended to have a popular vote over the Senate. And so today the entire legislative branch is elected democratically. And the president is basically elected democratically, although with the slight caveat of the electoral votes each state has. And now a democratically elected president and a democratically elected Senate are the sources of authority for choosing the judges. And so even though our founders wanted to restrict our government to be a 1/6 democratic influence, I think they were dancing with the bear. With the beast, in that democracy is an inherently evil form of government, and it didn't work. And when you take fire into your bosom, don't think you will not be burned, because you will. And so our government now is almost thoroughly democratic, even to this extent that in many states we're voting for judges, and we're directly voting for initiatives and constitutional amendments and laws. So we've become an intensely democratic nation. Do you agree or disagree with that analysis of our history?
Well, I agree with where it's gone.
Right.
I don't believe that it didn't work, because it worked pretty well for, geez, over 100 years.
Well, I disagree with that. You're
I believe it worked pretty well.
All right. So,
Once they started changing things, making the Senate elected by the people, which gives us basically two House of Representatives, and only one of which is extremely difficult to vote out.
Well, right. Do you remember which House the founders said had to initiate spending bills?
Oh, yeah, that's the House of Representatives.
Yeah, and their reasoning was because the representatives were the representatives of the people. And therefore, every spending bill has to originate in the House, because surely, this is how they reasoned, the representatives of the people would never spend the people into debt. They would never spend more money than the people could afford to be taxed. I would say on that major issue, they failed utterly.
I don't think the founders failed. I think the people.
But the founders were trusting in the people to keep their own purse.
Right.
Which the people will never keep their own purse. If the founders focused more on the biblical presentation of the nature of man, fallen, man is a thief, man is basically evil, Jesus said the majority are going to hell, and only the minority are on the narrow road to God. If they would have realized that, then they would have not trusted the power of the purse to the raw power of the majority in a democratic house. They wouldn't have done that. But they were heavily influenced by the political correctness of their day. And representative government was the political correctness of 250 years ago.
Back in those days, people were a lot more aware of what was going on in the political world. Today, you know, you can talk to a lot of people, they don't even know who the president is. Or if they do, they don't know what branch of the government he is in charge of.
Or what he does, or who's the vice president.
There's a lot of people, a lot of ignorance and apathy.
Right. People were more well-informed 250 years ago, but that's partly because there was no radio or TV, and it was very difficult to get entertainment. And so what was happening in your world, that was a primary source of entertainment. And now news loses out to NFL football.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's a fact of reality. But I think we do see, in hindsight, we see that the House of Representatives is not fiscally responsible and that the federal government has taken control over the states and that the federal government did that with the pry bar of democracy, which the founders put in the Constitution to begin with. I think the founders put into the Constitution the seeds of our own destruction.
No, I still blame the people, not the institution.
Yeah, but didn't the founders trust that the people would elect just those who would be responsible to the House of Representatives?
The founders at the time, yes.
Yeah, the founders trusted. In fact, Benjamin Franklin is known for saying, when a woman asked him, "What kind of government did you give us?"
Yeah, a republic if you can keep it.
Yeah, madam, a republic if you can keep it. And this form of government, we were told, was an experiment that would only work if the people are righteous.
Exactly.
And like your quote, that we need to govern ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But that is something that men might trust in reasonably if they didn't have the history of the Bible before them, which tells us by the authority of God that you cannot count on the majority to be righteous, because the majority will do whatever they can, generally speaking, to exploit their neighbors.
Yes.
And to exploit the weak. So to the extent that the majority have power over the purse, the majority will rob from, for example, the rich, because the rich are never a majority.
Right.
And so we have in this country, you know, people are envious of those who have more, and so they vote to tax wealthy people at a greater percent, which is stealing.
Yeah, big time.
Right, but it's our Constitution, as written by the founders, that
the taxation part is not written by the founders.
Well, you're right.
In 1913.
Well, not the income tax. You're right, but the founders gave the majority, the people, the power of the purse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ultimately the power to tax. And so the majority, what force is there that's going to restrain the majority once you give it the power of the purse? And one other thing that I'd like to run by you, Pat, and see what your take is on it. But I think another example of evidence that we put too much faith in the Constitution is in Article 1 of the Constitution, the framers said that they would count slaves as 3/5 of a person. And I realize the historical reasons for that. The states wanted them to be counted for purposes of appropriations of money and representatives in Congress. But they didn't want them to be counted as a full person, because then maybe somebody would get the idea that they were actually human or they should actually vote or something. And so they compromised and said that slaves, which were overwhelmingly African-American, blacks, were counted as 3/5 of a person. Now that is the source of much of the suffering that we've experienced in our country. And I would say that's another example of how our founders were not operating on godly principles of right and wrong, but they were wrestling with political, pragmatic issues, and they put together the best they could under difficult circumstances. And what they put together was riddled with errors.
Well, I'm not going to say it was perfect, but I will say that it is much better than anything else that's ever been done.
All right.
That's my opinion.
All right. Well, that's reasonable, because then to counter that, I'd have to look at another government that's done better than America. And America, for the most part, has done better than any of the empires in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've had more freedom and we had many biblical principles in our laws.
Right.
And many of, like, the 13 original colonies, about half of them in their state constitutions said you had to profess faith in God, in the Bible, or even in Jesus Christ in order to hold public office. And so our country was heavily a Christian country, and I think that that's why we've done so well, although I think our own government has been our greatest enemy. As Abraham Lincoln said, if this country ever falls, it's not from without, it's from within.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I think that principle was as true in 1789 as it is today.
Well, yes. It's human nature. You know, human nature never changes.
That's true. So we're almost at, how much time do we have left? And Pat, thank you for spending the entire show with us. We only have 2 minutes left. I'd like to give the website out again. Pat, how long have you been involved with GulfOne.com?
About 6 weeks, 8 weeks.
So you're a newcomer to the site.
Oh, yes.
And you, I assume, maybe wrongly, that you were in the first Gulf War.
Well, I was in the military, but I wasn't over in the desert.
Okay, you weren't deployed.
No, sir.
But you were serving at the time.
Right, I was in Oklahoma City, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. And to let you know, while I'm not a big fan of George W. Bush, I'm very thankful that he has waged the war on terror as well as he has in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And we thoroughly support our troops in these efforts here at Bob Inert Live.
Oh yeah, I always support the troops. Yeah. I may not agree with their bosses, what the political class are telling them to do, but I support the people.
Well, yeah,
on the ground.
In a just war, I'm half German, and if I was in Germany 60 years ago, I would hope that I would be against the troops.
Oh yeah.
Right. So as long as our government is in a just war, then we should support the troops.
Right.
As we're in right now, the war against terror.
Yeah, we could do a whole nother show on just that.
yeah, you're exactly right. So Pat Baska, it's spelled BASKA. Pat, I want to thank you for joining us. Hey, and I'll give you an invitation to tune in sometime.
Well, thank you.
Right here at kgov.com, and we take calls at 800-8-NYART 5 nights a week at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. So Pat, thank you. You've been very gracious. Thanks
well, thank
for letting
you.
Us. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. All right. So I'm thrilled that Pat was willing to talk through those issues with us. And I think it's worthwhile because Pat is serious about this. Obviously, I'm serious. Many conservatives are serious, but I think we fall short when we look for the answer in, I've heard it all, European common law is the ideal, or the Constitution, or the Federalist Papers, or the Republic of Rome, or Solon of Athens, when he wrote the laws of that city that were Republican in nature, and even documents, articles that have been printed, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of copies of articles about democracies versus republics by conservatives that attribute Solon of Athens with originating the notion of a government restricted by law. When we just ignore God, who said that the king must obey the law. Even the king is not above the law, but he should obey the law. Why would so many Christian conservatives give credit to the Romans, the English, the Greeks, and not to God through Moses? Well, that's what this show's here to turn around. This is Bob Inert reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.